It's just being faithful. Mm-hmm. Just staying faithful. For 7.5 years, I've tried to stay faithful with this ministry and not sugarcoat it, not, you know, make it cookie cutter, and certainly not compromise or water down the gospel ever. You know, we stand firm in that we are, you know, we are a Christian company who want to point people to Jesus Christ. That's it. And I think we just try to stay faithful. And then when the Lord wants to move, like he did in February with Brock Purdy, he can move. Yeah. And we're just trying to stay faithful and carrying our loaves and fish, like so many talk about, and especially Jesus talks about in the Word. And we just try to do that as best as possible.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Aulick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, welcome everybody. It is so very good to be with you. And before we start, I want to ask you a favor. If you have enjoyed Made to Advance, please rate and review us. That helps us get the word out about the podcast. And it also helps us bring on more incredible guests like the one we have today. Jason Romano is with me, and he spent 17 years at ESPN as a producer and senior manager, working on shows like SportsCenter, like Monday Night Football, like Mike and Mike in the Morning, and a whole lot more. But then in 2017, Jason left ESPN to work at a ministry called Sports Spectrum, where he is an executive producer and hosts a very popular podcast. In fact, it's one of my favorites, and it's named right after his ministry, Sports Spectrum. Look it up. Jason's written two books, one called Live to Forgive and the other called The Uniform of Leadership. And Jason, welcome to Made to Advance. It's so good to have you on the show.
Yeah, Brian, it's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, I already feel like we're kind of close because we inadvertently scheduled a meeting on your birthday earlier this week. So, I mean, I feel like we're tied here. We've celebrated your birthday together.
We did. Yeah. It was like, people asked me, what did I do on my birthday? I said, well, I worked. It was a Tuesday. I mean, what else am I going to do? My wife was at work and my kid is in college away. So, yeah, I worked. And part of that day was getting to meet you and talk to you, which was good.
Yeah, really good. Well, it was funny because I was coming in today and my daughter said, so who are you going to talk to? And I said, who I was talking to. And I said, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who are professionals at all different, in all different kinds of spheres. But this is the first time I'm having a conversation with somebody who is literally an expert at having conversations like this. So after we're done with this, you're going to have to give me some pointers and some tips. You're like the sensei. I'm the Padawan here or something.
Well, I'm playing guest, so I'm yielding to you today, my friend. You were in control. But yes, whatever feedback you want, I'd be happy to give, but I'm sure you'll do a great job. No problem. Conversation, right, Brian? That's all we're trying to do.
That's it. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know, the biggest question I came in with today, and having now watched many of your interviews, although not nearly all of them, you have such a deep bench. And boy, again, I know we talked about about your podcast in the intro, such a great resource.
Yeah.
But here's my number one question. It's deep. I kept thinking to myself, what shirt is he going to wear today? Because I have seen more schools and teams represented in your apparel than I think about anybody I know. So here's the real question is, beyond even what shirt, what teams do you actually root for? Because, you know, I can figure out some affiliations, but I mean, who are the teams that you're like, I'm all in?
Yeah, so very rarely do I wear the teams that I root for because I try. It depends on who I'm talking to. I am strategic about the shirts I wear, if I'm being honest, in certain conversations. If I'm talking to somebody in the NFL and they played for any team but the Cowboys, then I'm not going to wear my Cowboys apparel. So I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. Yeah. And if I'm doing the same thing in Major League Baseball, I'm not going to wear my New York Mets hat or my New York Mets jersey. Not that I ever wear a jersey when I do my recordings, but I wouldn't wear it because I don't want somebody from the Braves or somebody from the Phillies or whoever they might be affiliated with to automatically think that I'm against them because I root for a team that's not theirs. I want them to know I'm rooting for them, and I really truly am, even though I'm still a fan of the New York Mets. And the same with the Celtics. I'm a big Boston Celtics fan, world champion Boston Celtics, and so very unashamed about that too. And I have a giant picture behind me of Larry Bird, so that kind of gives that one away. But I still, when I talk to NBA people, you know, I try not to wear any kind of Celtics gear because I just want them to know I'm not here as a fan of the Celtics. I'm here as a follower of Jesus. You are my guest, so I want to make you as comfortable as possible.
Yeah, that's good. I love that thinking. So just to summarize, rooting for the Celtics on the NBA side. Did you say the Mets on the baseball side of things? Okay. And then, no, you didn't mention basketball.
Basketball, the Celtics.
Oh, Celtics. Then, excuse me. Yeah. And then
football.
That's what I meant. Yeah. Football's Cowboys. Okay. Did we hit anything else? Hockey?
Hockey. I was a New Jersey Devils fan as a kid because their minor league team was in Albany, New York, where I grew up.
Yeah.
The Albany River Rats. But I'm not, again, with hockey, I think it's a little easier. And the same with college sports, where I'm not really a fan of a specific team. I just root for players. And so in hockey, we've had a lot of hockey guys on, and we'll have some more on lately. And I just root for them. I want them to do well. So I'll root for the teams when they're playing. The one caveat is, like, I love rooting for the Cowboys, obviously, and watching them disappoint me has become quite frequent in 30 years of watching them. But I remember in 2017 when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, I had the opportunity to interview six members of the Philadelphia Eagles 2 weeks after they won the Super Bowl about their walk with Jesus, all together in a big conference room. And I did not let them know that I was a Cowboys fan, but that was one of the most ironic, weird interviews I've ever done, because as a follower of Jesus, I was brothers with these guys, right? Like, we all love the Lord. And here we are. We actually prayed in the interview too. So here we were praying, locking arms in a prayer with six members of the Eagles. None of them knew I was a Cowboys fan. And I'm thinking, what a sense of humor you have.
Yeah. Lord.
Like, this is what you did. But that's how I see it now. Like, even the Eagles players that were playing in that Super Bowl, I rooted for. I don't know. I can't be honest and say I rooted for the Eagles to win the Super Bowl.
Sure.
But I wanted to see Nick Foles do well. And I wanted to see some of those players do well, because when they do well, you know, they have a platform to be able to tell the world about Christ. And I'm on that team before I root for any other team.
Right on, right on. My youngest son is a huge Cowboys fan. So every year, part of our Christmas tradition is Tony Romo ornament goes up on the Christmas tree. I have to look at Tony every holiday season. So
hopefully he's not throwing any interceptions, because unfortunately that happened a little too much when he played. But yeah, that's awesome. I always tell young people, listen, I've been a Cowboys fan since I was six. 1979, still have a picture on my sixth birthday of wearing my Roger Staubach jersey. So I've been a Cowboys fan for a very long time. I lived through the 90s when I was in college, when they were winning Super Bowls, which was great. But they haven't won anything since. So I tell people, if you're a Cowboys fan today, you're not doing it because they win a lot.
That's right.
Because they haven't won anything. No Super Bowls, zero. No NFC championships in 29 years. So for your son, I'm really curious why he rooted for the Cowboys, but I think it's great, and I hope that they can, you know, give him a championship someday.
Yeah, someday.
Before he dies and I die. Let's put it that way. Which he'll be much further after me, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's 18, so man, he's got some years to persevere as a fan. I think his grandfather got him started on the Cowboys way back when, and it's funny how a kid has an encounter with a team.
Yeah.
We were from Indiana, or we are from Indiana, so we were big Hoosiers growing up. And, you know, we're Michigan, here in Michigan, and both of our kids, when we had friends that were U of M grads, they were at their house once while my wife and I were on a road trip. They had a important U of M game, I don't remember what it was, up on a big screen TV. And that memory was so shaping that now my boys are just diehard Michigan fans. It's all from one night hanging out with friends, watching a game, not from their father.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, if you had to pick between the Indiana Hoosiers and the Michigan Wolverines in football,
you're taking the Wolverines.
Yeah. I think they made the right call. So, well, let's go a little bit back in your backstory. You've got a really, really interesting journey that we're going to walk through today. Okay. But let's kind of go, if we can, all the way back, just a little bit of your growing up years. What was your family like? And I know you kind of became a Christian later in life. So tell me just about the family dynamic and also the spiritual dynamic as you were a kid.
Yeah, I grew up the oldest of three boys. My brother's Chris, middle brother Chris, who's a pastor, and younger brother Damian, who is in computers and doing great things in cyber research. Those three are who we grew up together with. We're all 2 years apart, so I'm 4 years older than my youngest brother, 2 years older than my middle brother, and you know, we were all very close, even to this day, thankfully. Praise God. We are close. We are friends, best friends in many ways. And I love those guys. But, you know, my parents divorced when I was almost 6 years old, right before my sixth birthday. So I really don't remember a dynamic of having mom and dad in the house together growing up. My mom was, you know, in many ways my hero growing up. I mean, she's just a rock star who raised three boys as a single mom, worked multiple jobs to do that as a nurse, and was constantly working, but constantly trying to take care of her kids. My dad, unfortunately, got caught up very early in alcohol, and is an alcoholic who, and we can go into that in a little bit, but like he struggled and still to this day has some struggles with alcoholism that really started kicking in before I was born, much less after I was four or five. My mom just didn't want to deal with this anymore. And for the safety of her three kids, she divorced my dad. And, you know, both my mom and my dad remarried.
Okay.
They both then got divorced again. So it didn't quite work out the second time. And then my mom, the third time, got remarried to my stepdad, Ron, who's wonderful. And they've been married for 29 years, I think, now. So, yeah, that was the dynamic. And, you know, I would say this, though. My mom and my grandparents, George and Mary Romano, those three people allowed us to have what I would call a pretty normal childhood. I mean, we knew that my dad was lurking and he was around, but he wasn't present in our lives, which is, there's a difference there.
Sure.
But my grandparents, when my mom was working her three jobs, were always there and took us in, took us to our games, took us to the movies as kids. I remember going to see, you know, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi like multiple times as a kid, because my grandparents just said, okay, we'll take you to the movies and we'll take you to Pizza Hut after, we'll take you to Long John Silver or McDonald's or wherever we went to get food. Like they were the ones that allowed us to have these really cool experiences and, you know, bought us tons of things. Like they spoiled us rotten. So that was a really cool, I think, dynamic in this is that even though we did grow up with a dad who wasn't around that much or wasn't able to be present in our lives, we still had a fairly normal childhood. Sports was very big in our household, as you might imagine. That does stem from my dad and the times that I spent with him, you know, most weekends or whatever it looked like as far as custody, we would spend time with my dad and it usually revolved around watching sports or playing sports, little league, things like that. So, and my grandfather, his father was a big and, you know, a huge sports fan in many ways. So that kind of was where my love for sports, and both my brothers love sports too. So that's where that all started. So there is some good in the sense of what happened with my dad, because he passed on his love of sports to me. It wasn't until we got older in high school where we started to see the sort of effect that not having my dad in our lives or the alcohol that he drank and the disease that he battled, we started to see the effects of that into our lives as we started getting older. And then that just continued all throughout, you know, my adult life.
Now, did your mom or your grandparents, did they have a big spiritual inclination growing up? Was faith part of the story for your family or not so much?
Kind of. My grandfather was a very devout Catholic. And I mean, I would even say, thinking back now and knowing how he lived his life, I believe he was born again. Like I believe there are Catholics who understand the gospel and and salvation. But I was not one of them. I was the one who went to church with him. He dragged me to church and told me, if you come to church, you know, I'll buy you some pizza and take you to go bowling or play video games or whatever. So he would bring us to church, but it wasn't like something we had to do. And it wasn't something that was every Sunday. So it was very sporadic. We did kind of check the boxes, if you will, of being baptized as babies, making my first communion when I was seven, being confirmed and having my confirmation when I think I was 14. So we did those things kind of just to check the boxes for my grandfather. And my mom wasn't really ever one to force feed faith or even want to raise us in faith. I mean, we were very secular as far as how we lived. We certainly, you know, we're caught up in the world and just everything about what the world could offer. You know, my mind was never thinking about spiritual things or God or anything like that. This is an honest quote. I laugh at this because I can tell it now based upon where my faith is today. But my mom actually told me, if you just make your confirmation, Jason, I will never ask you to go to church again. So it was almost like this checkbox that allowed me to do all the things I was supposed to do to please my mom, to please my grandparents. And she said those words and I never forgot them, because later on in life, I kind of chuckled after I became a follower of Jesus and just looked back and be like, remember when you told me I didn't have to go? Well,
right.
I want to go now because I really like church. But, and my mom, I think there's probably a little bit of a regret in there. Like, I don't think I would ever say that to my kids, but I understood what my mom was trying to do. She was trying to raise us to be morally good people after she saw what happened with my dad. So, it wasn't really prominent, and it wasn't until I was 27, until I, you know, started walking with Jesus.
Yeah. What, well, and even before you say that, and this is a little bit of fast forwarding, cause I want to hear what led you to have an encounter with Jesus that ended up really changing things for you. But I love your example, because even today with all of the cool things you've done professionally and are doing now in ministry, you really have a strong, engaged commitment to the local church. You're not somebody who's out there, oh, I'm doing all these Christian things. I don't have enough time to engage in my church. You know, I've seen your social media. I've seen where you're so plugged in. You're building into the next generation. Just, I love that example so much. So thanks for being so public with not just your faith, but being public with your commitment to your church. But what did lead to the change when it came to really having an encounter with Jesus that reoriented your life?
Yeah, and I'll share more about, maybe if we have time, the local church and the work that I do. I just love the local church, and I believe in the local church and the community of saints so much, and building community. But for me, it was my brother Chris, my middle brother. You know, he was the first in our family to become a follower of Jesus, and that took place, let's see, 98 was when he became a follower of Christ, and he was headed down the wrong path. Like, he was a mess. He was caught up in a lot of things he shouldn't have been doing. And God got a hold of him. You know, he was kind of given a little bit of an ultimatum by his then girlfriend, / fiance, who's now his wife. Okay. Praise God. So really my sister-in-law, Tara, was the one who kind of started this ball, rolling for our whole family. But my brother, Chris, became a follower of Christ in March of 98. And I watched him for the next 3 years, and he changed. Like, he was a changed man. But it was a little weird at first. Like, why are you so religious all of a sudden? And what is this born again thing? What are you talking about? But if it works for you, great. I don't want any of that. Mm-hmm. And by the time we got married, which would have been in 99, he got married in August of 99. I got married in November of 99. And I went to his church, for that wedding. And I was in the wedding as a groomsman. And I remember watching how he was living his life at that point, how important the church was for him, his pastor, just watching him grow as a follower of Jesus. And he wrote me a card. I don't think I've ever shared this on any other podcast, but I remember Chris wrote me a card of thanks to just that I was in his wedding with him, right? Just a normal gesture that, you know, the bride and the groom would do, is just a thank you note to those who participated. And I still have that note in some kind of shadow box here in the house. And I remember the note said, I cannot wait for our kids to grow up in the Lord and be together, something like that. And he was just talking in a way that I thought was really weird at the time about following Christ. But I believe he firmly thought that we were all going to eventually come to know Christ. Mm-hmm. And that was November of 99. Fast forward to Mother's Day, 2001. And he invites me to his church. Now, you'll like this, Brian. I told you I grew up in a Catholic church, right? And there's, I'm not bashing the Catholic church. It's just a different type of ceremony and experience when you go to it. My brother got saved and started attending a very charismatic Pentecostal church. So when you walk in, it's like listening to music in the dentist office, very kind of quiet and somber, to walking into a rock show, right? And it's music and it's drums and it's clapping and singing and jumping and dancing and even speaking in some languages that I didn't understand. And that was really weird and still might be a little weird for me today. But when I walked in there, I was weirded out. But I told my brother, because it was Mother's Day and my mom was coming, that we would all go to church together, that I would go with him. And I don't remember the message that was shared. I wish I did. But I'm sure it was the gospel, because I know that church and I know that pastor. And I walked out of there and he asked me, you know, we went back to his house and he just said, what did you think of the service? And I said, well, that music thing was a little weird for me. I said, but the message was okay. It was all right. And he goes, really? Well, come back here with me for a second. And so we go back to the back bedroom of his house and he sits me down and he's like, I would love to share with you what the gospel is if you'd like to hear it. And I said, sure, go ahead. And he shared with me the gospel at that point. Now, I don't know if I fully grasped it, but he was sharing about salvation and the cross and, you know, the resurrection and just the whole idea of sin. And it was pretty quick what he shared, but he's like basically saying to me, do you want this for you? Do you want Christ in your life? And I said, I think so, sure. And so we prayed a prayer, probably the sinner's prayer, the typical prayer that you might pray with someone. And then that's the day where I started following Christ. And I tell him and many people this, I say thank you, because if it wasn't for Tara telling Chris and then Chris telling me, and then my daughter now being raised up in the faith and my wife as a follower, like who knows the ripple effects that would have taken place or that have taken place because of that one day.
That's right.
But I don't know if I fully would have gone to heaven, honestly, or if I would have gone to heaven at all if I had died that night, because I'm not sure I grasped exactly what I was saying yes to. But the lesson in that is I wasn't supposed to. I think I was just supposed to say yes, surrender, and start. And then I've been on this journey now for 23 years. And it took me about a year and a half to really understand Christ. And that's when I decided to get baptized as an adult. And I've been on the journey ever since. And I always say praise God for that, but also thank you, Chris Romano, because this is all his fault in a good way that any of this ministry stuff is happening in my life or church, you know, it's being a part of my church. It's all because of my brother, and I'm so grateful.
Man, I love that example. And it sounds like he did a really, really good job. This is what we really, you know, when as a pastor, I'm always trying to commend and encourage our folks to do is leverage the opportunities you have in an appropriate, non get in somebody's face, and you know, in a rare calling of God moment, there's a time to be a little more challenging. But mostly, just be relational, love somebody, meet them where they are, and then I love that he asked the question. You know, can I? It sounds like he asked you sort of, would you be interested in hearing the gospel?
Oh yeah.
And so many people would be shocked if they asked people around them that question, how many people would say yes? That's it. I'm still shocked. I'm a pastor. And I'll say, would you like to understand the gospel? Yeah, that would be helpful. You know,
what was really interesting too, is my brother, you know, at the time I was 27, he's born in 76. So 25, he had just turned 25. But another thing that was a part of this is, you know, his son, Sam, was born 9 months earlier, my nephew. He was the first Romano kid to be born. And I watched how he acted as a dad and as a husband, and you know, how important it was even for, you know, 6 month old Samuel Romano to hear about Jesus and the way that he was praying with him. And these are just attractive things to me that I think when he was asking me if I wanted to hear the gospel, I think the Lord had been preparing me to at least hear what he had to say, because I watched how he lived his life. And, you know, there is a bit of boldness in this though, and being unashamed and saying, listen, I'm going to share something with you. He did ask me, but I think he was going to share it either way. But I think because he was my brother, I trusted him to that he wasn't going to put me in a really weird spot, that he wasn't going to be threatening or force feed anything into me. And let me be honest, like even as he grew into becoming a PhD in biblical studies, and now he runs a seminary, a Bible college and seminary. Okay, he's the president of it. Vision Christian Bible College and Seminary. Like, I got to give that a shout out.
Yeah, for sure.
He's not only taken this faith thing to a level of like raising his kids in the church, he became a pastor and is now, you know, Dr. Christopher Romano, biblical scholar. So I've watched him, and he went in a different direction than I did. You know, I was still at ESPN and trying to figure out my journey there, and you know, married to Dawn, and we were hoping to have kids, and eventually we became dad to and mom to Sarah. So my journey and his journey were different, but we did it together as followers of Christ, which I really, really love.
Man, is that really cool. You knew early on that, professionally speaking, that you wanted to get to ESPN. You did some work to kind of earn your way in and have bolster your resume a little bit. How was it then, how long had you been a Christian once you started ESPN?
I started at ESPN July 20. Wow, I'm getting the dates wrong. July 18th, 2000. That was my first day at ESPN. I became a follower of Christ May 13th, 2001. So what's that? 10 months later.
About. Yeah. Okay.
So gotcha. Yeah, I was only a non-Christian, if you want to call it that, at ESPN for 10 months.
Wow. I was thinking that you came to Christ actually before the ESPN time. So you're figuring out your career at ESPN while you're figuring out what it means to follow Jesus. Tell me about that. I mean, you're in a, what was it like?
Well, I mean, you've mentioned, you know, I always wanted to get to ESPN, but that's like saying I always wanted to become a Major League Baseball player too. So when I was a kid, that's what I wanted to do. And then as I got into my high school years, I knew I wanted to go into sports broadcasting, but ESPN's kind of like making it to the major leagues for me, at least. I thought there's just no way, but it'd be great if it happened. And then it happened, right? Like, and I worked in local radio and got an opportunity and took the job at ESPN. And yeah, I think when I got there, and even after I became a Christian, this is where I tell people, you know, I was not the perfect, I mean, there are no perfect Christians, but I was definitely not the perfect Christian because I don't even know if I had my identity wrapped in the right places. I would have told you I followed Jesus. I would have told you I was in church. I even started attending Bible studies and life groups and small groups at church. So I was involved, but my identity for many years was wrapped around being an ESPN producer. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who would say that of people of faith who work there, because ESPN is ESPN, right? Like it's yeah. just like being an NFL player and you play for, you know, a big name, a Dallas Cowboys, like you're going to be associated with playing for that team. That's kind of what I felt like I was associated with, working for this gigantic sports media company. Mm-hmm. And I bought into that.
Yeah.
And so I would tell you that I believed in God and I trusted in Jesus, but God was a piece of my life, but the centerpiece was not God. It was ESPN. And I had to figure out, you know, and it took me almost 10 years, Brian, to figure that out. But I had to figure out and understand that my identity was in Christ and I was a follower of Christ first. And that was the hardest part of the journey.
How did you awaken? Yeah. How did you awaken to that was a journey you needed to take, that was an important growth area, spiritually speaking?
Yeah. Tony Dungy. Coach Tony Dungy comes to ESPN in the summer of 2009, I believe it was. And I'm assigned as a producer to basically be his producer for the day. And so I was excited. I got to do that with a lot of athletes and different people at ESPN. But Coach Tony Dungy, like, this is the real deal, right? Hall of Famer. He had just written his fantastic book, The Mentor Leader, and was a follower of Jesus, obviously, right? And so Coach Dungy comes to ESPN and, you know, I'm excited to meet with him, and he's the one that really steered me towards understanding where my identity lies, because he asked me what might be the most important question I've ever been asked, at least when I was at ESPN. It was about maybe an hour into his time at ESPN, and we had just finished doing a radio hit on Mike and Mike in the Morning. And then we were in the green room, just kind of hanging out, waiting for the next interview on SportsCenter. And he just said, "Jason, I understand you're a Christian. You know, some of the people I'm here with know you as being a believer. You share, you know, Bible verses on Twitter, and I hear you're doing great things for the Lord. But let me ask you a question. How are you living your faith out here at ESPN? What's that look like for you?" And my eyes got big, and I just kind of shook my head. And then I put my head down a little bit, and I said, "Can you do that, Coach? I don't even know if you can do that. Like, I'm a producer at ESPN. I mean, I would almost have to work for FCA or a church or, you know, Sports Spectrum, right? Yeah. Like, I can't do this if I'm working at ESPN, can I?" And before he even got a chance to jump in, and he was going to, because I sensed disappointment in my answer when I'm telling him this, Jessica Quinn, who was his assistant at the time and the publicist, she and I had worked on a few projects together previously, and she knew that I was a Christian. And thankfully felt bold enough to stand up, because as my answer was being shared to Coach Dungy, she kind of jumps in, and I'm trying to have you picture a disappointed mom looking at the kid as they walk into the door late for dinner. You know, that disappointed look.
Yeah,
like, Where have you been?
Yeah.
What are you doing? That's the look I got from Jessica. And she's like, "You don't understand what Coach Dungy's trying to ask you and what he's trying to say here, do you?" And I'm just like, "Keep going." "I don't, but keep going." And she said, "Listen, God has placed you here for a purpose. And maybe he'll call you away someday in working, but until then, you're to bloom where you are planted."
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to call my second book Bloom Where You're Planted, but we ended up calling it something different. But the second chapter is called Bloom Where You're Planted because it was so impactful on my life just saying that. And she's like, listen, look at the place that you work. There's 5,000 people in Bristol, Connecticut every day walking into this place. What a ministry field that you have, and what an opportunity that you have to be the hands and feet of Jesus to all these people. So don't think this can't be your ministry, because it can.
Right.
And I thought, whoa. And it was like this light bulb turned on, Brian. And from that day on, and Coach Dungy's kind of probably in the background, like clapping, like, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But that moment changed my life. And I would say over the next year or two, I really started to understand what it meant to be a follower of Christ who happened to work at ESPN versus being an ESPN producer who happened to be a follower of Christ. The order is really important there if you're going to be a Jesus follower. And for me, it took Tony Dungy and Jessica to kind of shake me a little bit and slap me upside the head and get me to think properly. And I think what I started to realize when you look at scripture is that's what Jesus is trying to say.
Right.
Like all throughout his ministry, it's about like, seek first the kingdom of God. You know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Like, I am who you need to seek first, and then everything else will take care of itself.
Right.
And that's kind of what changed, you know, after that, starting to realize that my ESPN work and the journey that I was on there, as well as anywhere else, could be a great place to live my faith out.
You know, massive shout outs to Coach Dungy and his assistant, because they don't need to speak up right then. They don't need to use this moment to challenge. I mean, what they're really doing, it's funny because he's doing exactly what they're hoping for you to do.
Yes.
He's using his platform in that moment to disciple you by asking a good question that led to some serious self-reflection.
Totally.
And who knew that little glimpse of a conversation would be so shaping, so impactful over the long haul.
Yeah.
But so I love that they just operated in faith. They say, hey, this is an opportunity for us to live out our faith and be, you know, with everything he's got going on professionally, again, first a Christian. I love that.
And he didn't have to do that.
Like, right.
I was just the producer walking him around. I'm just a dude, right? Like, I'm not anybody famous. I'm still not anybody famous. Like, I don't see myself that way. I was just a guy trying to do my job that day. And quite frankly, kind of excited and fanboying a little bit over the fact that I'm hanging out with Tony Dungy.
Right.
And then he turns the tables and starts showing interest in me and my journey and what it looks like for me to be a believer at ESPN. And I'm truly thankful. I really am, because we talk about my brother introducing me to Christ. I always speak very highly about Coach Dungy because he didn't just, you know, show interest in kind of learning about me. He took a dude who he'd never met and suddenly, in many ways, showed me how to really follow Jesus as a man of faith in the workplace.
I am curious. How did it change then how you did your job? Or, you know, so you have this sort of awakening of, hey, I'm here first as a Christ follower, second as a member of the ESPN team. But how did it shape you ongoingly then relative to your work and how you interacted with your team and such?
Yeah, I think, number one, what I've realized was I was hired to be an ESPN producer. And so that was my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was called to do that job as best as I could. And I failed on some days, and I hope I succeeded on others enough to be there long enough as long as I was there. But I realized that's honoring God by doing your work with excellence. So I tried to do that, because I think if I was a poor worker, if I wasn't really focused on my job well, like, nobody's going to have to listen to anything I have to say anyways.
Right.
So if I want to earn the trust of people and actually maybe have a conversation with them about Jesus, they ain't going to listen to me if I'm the worst worker in the bunch, right? And so I needed to be excellent at my job, hopefully, and I tried to do that. But then it was just looking for opportunities to serve, to put others first. You know, I would say leading up to that time, I really put myself first in my job. I wasn't sitting there looking for opportunities to serve others. I wasn't looking at the work that I was doing and how it might make others look as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was really just focused on me, and I paid for that a little bit, you know, throughout a couple of those years right before Coach Dungy was there, and I didn't get opportunities that I thought I should have gotten. What I saw after that, as I started to serve others, really put others first and just say, hey, how can I help you here? You know, is there anything I can do for you? I saw opportunities increase for me, you know, in different promotions and different jobs that I was able to take, and then really just loving them. And I'm stealing a little bit from my friend John Gordon, the author, who talks about loving and serving and caring in general as a follower of Christ. That's kind of what it was. You know, it was being as good a worker as I could, and then loving and serving those that I worked with every day. And did I do it perfectly? No. I've had moments upon moments, partially why I wrote the second book to share, where I didn't do that really well, even after Coach Dungy's encounter with myself. Mm-hmm. But I tried my best, and I think it really just gave me a better perspective on seeing my job as a place where I could go each and every day to glorify God. And that did lead to a few conversations. It didn't lead to hundreds of people coming to follow Jesus because of my witness at ESPN. I wish I could say that, but I think it just planted some seeds and gave people the opportunity to see a different type of person. You know, I didn't curse, and I tried to serve others and tried to carry myself in a way that was different. And I think they saw that. And, you know, if they were offended or affected by that in a negative way, then I was just trying to be me, you know, and follow Christ the best way I could.
Well, it's so clear too that, you know, people picked up on that. And I remember watching the clip. I believe it was your final day.
Yes.
On Mike and Mike in the Morning. And if people want to watch the clip, is your website jasonromano.com? Is it that simple? Yeah.
Yep, it's that simple. Or you can just YouTube it. You can search it on YouTube. It's there for sure.
Well, I remember watching that clip, and I don't know where those guys are at spiritually, but I do know that it was very clear. They know what you're about and what you stand for. And what's really cool is when you live the way that you live and you live with that kind of example around, and people pick up on it.
Totally.
It may not be that you get this major opportunity or whatever to share, but it is fascinating how often when people get into a hard place in their own lives and they know, oh, there's that guy, Jason, man, I know he's seemed like he's a religious guy and he does seem like a really solid dude. I think he's the guy I'm going to call right now when I'm having problems with my marriage or I'm having problems with something else. So I think it's just those living that kind of life really opens you up. I'm curious to, you know, you've already sort of spoken to this with the identity issues that come with working at an organization like ESPN, which just has so much social cachet.
Sure.
But there's also the side of things where you go home from work. It's, oh, what'd you do today? Oh, you know, I was just hanging out with Coach Dungy. Oh, I was just, you know. Let me pull up my phone here. That's what I was saying to my wife.
Yeah, there were days like that, many, many days.
Like, if I saw Jason's phone, I'd probably be just like, oh my goodness, look at this guy. Here's my question for you, though.
Yeah.
When you're in that kind of environment, and really you still are in that environment because you're still talking to some big dog folks out there.
Definitely.
Do you feel like, have you had to wrestle with any kinds of temptations that are unique to an environment where you're rubbing shoulders with those kinds of folks in the past, present? Tell me about that.
Yeah. I mean, really that's been a wrestle since I was, you know, first starting at ESPN, just being around the people that you kind of worship, you know, like I remember meeting Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann and Stuart Scott and Bob Lee, just legends, you know, Chris Berman. And I'm like, I work with these guys. That's just nuts to me because these are the guys that I would watch every single day growing up, you know, when I would want to get my sports highlights. And so that alone was like, all right, don't fanboy here. Like, people just like you say hello.
Yeah.
Don't tell them you worship them. You know, it's not like in Wayne. Remember in the movie Wayne's World where they meet Alice Cooper and they're like, we're not worthy. I promise you the thought crossed my mind, but I'm like, do not do that. So I didn't. And then eventually you start to meet some of those players and athletes that you worshiped. I mean, I remember meeting Tony Dorsett, and it's the only time I've really ever asked for an autograph where I went home. I found out Tony Dorsett was coming to ESPN. I went home, grabbed my football, and I did something that they pretty much tell you not to do. But I was so like just in awe, like this is my guy when I was 10 years old, that I got him to sign a ball for me, and I still have it in my basement. And then I think what really changed for me, because you talk about temptations, right? I wouldn't say I had any tempt other than the kind of the hero worship that I would talk about. You know, now we would just call that idolatry, like putting anything above God. But for me, you know, I think I met Daryl Strawberry in 2009 as well that year. And that's my sports hero, like number one, him and Larry Bird. But Daryl was the top of the top for me. as a 9-year-old boy and worshiped that guy. I mean, loved him. I kept stats of him, and he knows this now because we're friends. But when I first met him, I'm like, don't be Chris Farley on Saturday Night Live. Don't be Wayne's World, you know, with Alice Cooper. Don't do that. Like, don't worship this dude. Just be professional. And what was really interesting with Daryl was when he came to ESPN, he sat down, we were at breakfast in between interviews, and he just said, tell me about you. And I would tell him about, you know, my story of faith. And I told him about my dad a little bit. And suddenly that's the two connections that we had. Forget ESPN, forget the fact that this is my sports hero. This is a guy who had a dad who was an alcoholic, broken relationship with him, who also struggled with alcohol and drugs, Daryl, and then who also became a follower of Jesus and loves the Lord. And like, we had that in common, and that's what made him want to stay in touch with me, which is so weird to say. But after we left that day, he asked me for my phone number. He would constantly text. He would call, hey, how's your dad doing? I know he's struggling. How's he doing? Daryl would do that. And everything about hero worship, I think, in some ways went away as a guy who like, this is, I mean, I still kind of pinch myself and say, that's Daryl Strawberry right there. But he's my friend. Mm-hmm. And so, and I would venture to say not many people in life ever get to meet their hero and become friends with them.
Yeah.
That happened to me. And I'm friends with Daryl, not because I'm a Mets fan from the 1980s or that he played baseball with the Mets. I'm a friend of his because we're both followers of Jesus who have walked this forgiveness story, this journey of alcohol. And I was a child of an alcoholic. He was the alcoholic and had a dad who was an alcoholic. And that's what drew us together. And so the temptations, I would say, are to not fall back into being a kid who's a fan. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just can't help it, but you know, he's your friend. And, you know, I've met many athletes and interviewed many people, like you said, and I really just try to connect with them on the front of being followers of Christ. And that usually takes away all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not trying to get anything from them. I'm not asking them for autographs or pictures or tickets. If they offer, I'll file that in the back of my head and say, hey, if there's ever an opportunity, but I will never kind of try to take things from them or use them because of who they are. And I'm now very protective of the athletes that I interview. And I'm very mindful because, as you can imagine, a lot of people will come up to me, hey, can you connect me with this person? Can you reach out? Do you have this person's number? I would like to get them on my show. Can you do that? And I understand and respect, especially when it's, you know, gospel-centered kind of conversations.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm very protective of my relationships with those guys because I don't want them to think I'm just here to, you know, ask them to do stuff. Like, I just want to be there to serve them. That's what ministry is, right? Serving. And so I just want to be there for them. And so far, it's been good. So it's been a good walk.
It's really cool how when you really take the gospel to your core, and you know, I think that's probably a lifelong journey. In fact, I'm thinking right now of how Martin Luther used to say, I have to take the gospel and keep beating people over their heads with it year after year in their ministry, because we drift back to idolatry. We drift back to coming up with substitutes. But I think the more the gospel takes root, at least for me, when I'm around people of influence, people that have really had success in a certain area, I just go, you know what? You reflect the same image of God that I do.
Yeah.
You are afflicted by the same sin nature that I am. And you and I stand on the same level ground before the cross, needing the blood of Jesus for our salvation. And there is, and that all sounds maybe a little cliche in a church context, but there's something about that that levels the playing field in my heart, where it's just like, we are two people who desperately need Jesus. And totally. After that, then you can connect in a way that's, and I love what you said too. It's so freeing when you move from a posture of either hero worship or trying to get this person do you know, something for me, or when you move to a place of service, it's a real freedom when it's no longer about your agenda. It's how can I be a blessing to you? So it's really cool to hear you walk that journey.
Yeah. It's really great. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to shift gears, so you go ahead. What were you going to say?
And I'll just say real quick, I think the thing I've learned from that is, you know, we put these people on a pedestal, and we do this with all sorts of people, not just athletes.
Sure.
Athletes just happen to be who maybe you and I root for, right? And I've put them on pedestals too, if I'm being honest. But we do it with musicians. I mean, I love the Beatles. They're my favorite band. non-Christian band, if you want to call it that. And I've read so much about how they've had to walk through the hero worship that's taken place. I mean, for the 5, 6, 7 years that they were really a band, a functioning band, they were getting screamed and yelled, and they would play concerts and people just screaming. They couldn't even hear themselves play because they were screaming, because they worship these people. And we do it with musicians and actors and actresses and just famous people, even politicians, right? Like, you just see that out there. There's this hero worship for these people. And if you could ever really get to meet these people and spend time with them, especially as followers of Jesus, for the most part, I think that they do a great job on like taking that away. Mm-hmm. And like you just said, realizing they are followers of Jesus, broken, struggling, and in need of saving, just like you and I. They just have a different level to that because of the world and how the world portrays people that are famous or that are on these pedestals. And I see that differently now. I'm very mindful of what I post on social media about sports now. I didn't used to be, but now I really am, because I know that if I'm posting something about even my teams, that there might be a follower of Jesus on that team. It's like, dude, do you really think we were trying to lose today? We were trying to win. And I got to remember, oh yeah, that guy's a follower of Jesus who's trying to feed his family and just trying to create a career for himself. And like, let's see them that way. And I've been on that other end as a crazy sports fan to know it's very hard not to do that. But I just wish we could see, and even pastors, I mean, I'll just say it. We have to be careful not to hero worship and to just see people as people.
Yeah.
And if they happen to, you know, be in a different sphere of influence or have a stage or a microphone or a baseball bat or a football to throw, that's just where God has placed them, but they're still people, and they're in need of Christ just like you and I.
And I think for those of us who are in leadership or have more influential roles, anytime we can choose a posture of humility and be willing to lead out of weakness, I think that really helps kind of break some of that idol worship. Because I know every time I share an illustration out of my own background where I fail, where I didn't get it right, it's just a good reminder to people, hey, that's just a normal guy. Like, he might be in front of all of us and have screens and all these different things, but that's just a dude trying to figure out how to follow Jesus, just like I am in my house. And that's what I want them. I mean, that's what I am. You know, you want to be like, trust me, there's no difference here. I just happen to have the microphone. But you made in 2017, you make a massive career move. Some would say an insane career move. You're living the dream at ESPN. What are you doing, Jason? You want to walk away. So tell me about what the move was, and just, how did you even get to thinking, you know what, maybe this whole ESPN thing, maybe there's something more for me here. How did it all work out?
Well, it was a process, certainly not instantaneous, Brian. And I think as I started to, you know, ponder that day with Coach Dungy and see my walk with Jesus kind of be shaped in its proper place, if you will, I think in general, when we grow closer to the Lord, we start to, I think, have a nudging to want to do more for him. That's just natural. And I saw that take place first in my local church where my pastor, my late pastor, Pastor Joe Jacob, kind of saw something in me and said, hey, I think, you know, the elders here want to see if you'd be interested in joining the elder board and being a leader in our church. And me, like, I'm the least qualified. And he looked at me, he's like, we're all not qualified, Jason. That's kind of how this works. But we believe you are devoted to your family. You love Jesus. And I think you'd be a great leader in this church. And I said yes to that kind of reluctantly. But I think that was the start of me starting to say, okay, what's this going to look like to be more involved with the ministry of Jesus? And I just kind of filed that in the back of my head, Brian. And then I was at a conference, a very small conference, more like a gathering, in 2015. So about a year later, year and a half later, and there were 75 people there who were social media producers who worked in ministry, who worked for a church or a faith-based nonprofit or some kind of Christian organization. All of the people there except me. I was invited to speak. It was one of the first things I ever did as far as speaking to an audience. And I was invited because I worked at ESPN, because I was a social media producer at that time in 2015. And they just asked me to kind of share some of the beats of what I do for a living and the job I have and kind of the things that I'm paying attention to from a social media perspective. Then other people started sharing. And I really had this thought like, wow, there are people out there doing the same exact job I'm doing, but they're doing it for a greater purpose, at least from my perspective, because they're working for large churches or faith-based nonprofits or Christian organizations that were pretty big, many that you would know. And I don't know, at that point is when I started thinking, I wonder what that would be like. Mm-hmm. And then not far after that, I connected with a guy named Steve Stenstrom, who is now my boss at Sports Spectrum. And Steve is a former NFL quarterback. He played for Bill Walsh at Stanford. Like, he was decorated. He's a smart, smart dude. You know, if you go to Stanford, you're pretty smart. And he was also leading a ministry called Pro Athletes Outreach, which you and I talked about in the meeting the other day. Like, PAO, I think the work that they do is incredible, ministering to professional athletes and helping them grow in their faith in Jesus. So I'm meeting Steve and he's telling me about this and I'm like, oh my gosh, this exists. This would be amazing because I love sports. And we just didn't have a role at that time for me. But about a year later, after I was working back on Mike and Mike, he called me and he's like, hey, we just acquired this sports media ministry called Sports Spectrum. Have you heard of it? I said, I have. And he's like, yeah, the Lord has entrusted us to steward Sports Spectrum. And you're the first person I thought of to come on board and help get this thing going, or re-get this thing going, if you will, because it's been around for a long time. And I said, let me pray about this, because this wasn't just a one phone call deal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This was conversations over 2-3 months and lots of prayer, lots of conversations with my wife. And here's the kicker, Brian. They were offering, the best they could do was offer a 1-year contract position, so independent contractor. It wasn't even a full-time job. It was 40% less than what I was making at ESPN. Mm-hmm. There were no benefits, none of that. It was all gone. But I still felt in my spirit, like, you know, I was 42 at the time, I think. If I'm ever going to make a move, 43 is what I was. If I'm ever going to make a move, now's the time. It's kind of halftime of life. I just read this book called Halftime, which was fantastic.
Yeah, great book.
Going from success to significance. And I'm like, this is the time. Because if I wait till I turn 50, which is where I am now, I probably wouldn't leave ESPN because it was just comfortable and easy. And maybe I would have gotten let go because there was a lot of people that lost their jobs after I left for various reasons, you know, cutbacks and layoffs and all that. But I just felt like it was the right time. And I've never really fully taken a leap of faith like I was doing here. And I told my wife this. I said, listen, if this is not from God, then it'll probably mess up because it'll just be for me and I'll probably end up back at ESPN. But I believe this is the Lord steering me towards this and he'll make a way if he wants us to be here. Mm-hmm. And I'm 7+ years later, I'm still here. Wow. I became full-time in 2019. So it took a couple years to join the staff, but it was the best decision I've ever made. It was the scariest decision I've ever made. And it's the most fulfilling job I've ever had in my life. I love my time at ESPN. Mm-hmm. I do. So much fun. I even love the time I worked in local radio before ESPN. So much fun. But the work now that I get to do, where I get to do something that not many people get to do, and talk to some of the biggest names in the world and ask them about Jesus. Come on. Like, what is that? And I know
it's pretty great.
There's not that many people that get to do what I get to do. And I'm thankful for that every day. But God has opened up a door and kind of just blown my mind. Because also, and we can get into this if you want, but the idea of writing those two books that you mentioned at the top, that all happened after ESPN for the most part. So I wasn't looking to leave ESPN, go to Sports Spectrum, become an author, start speaking at all these like that's not what the plan was. It was literally just a little leap of faith to trust God and to follow the footsteps of coming into this world of Sports Spectrum. And then God just blew the doors open with all of these other things. And it's kind of mind-boggling when I think about it.
Yeah. That's a great principle, though. And I mean, you said a little step of faith. I think you used the word little a second ago. And let's just you know,
it
again,
was big. I get it.
Yeah. But I mean,
for me, it was like just saying yes or no. That's basically what it was, right?
If you were 22, I'd be like, yeah, it's, you know, it's just a little risk to go to this contract, 1 year contract job that has no benefits. Totally. But you're married. You've got your daughter by then, too.
She was in seventh grade. And we were starting to think about colleges and high school and all that stuff. And so that was on the table for sure.
So I get where you're like, yeah, this is the best time from a mid-career standpoint. Also, arguably, it's the worst time from the world standpoint this is a good time to just kind of reset everything and take a massive reduction in salary and not have health benefits and the whole bit. But here's what's so cool about that. So many stories in the Bible where when God calls somebody to go, they don't know how it's going to end. And if you're listening right now and you want to read through them, they are all summarized in Hebrews 11. You can go back and—
Heroes of faith.
That's right. You start out, you take the first step in faith. That's not a small step. It's a big step, but it is fascinating. Like that old Indiana Jones movie, I wish that everybody had to watch that scene where he takes the step out on that staircase and he doesn't see it. The moment it's there, then it presents itself to him.
Yes.
And that's how it is. God shows up. You know, you take the first step and then all of a sudden he starts doing things you never imagined. I am curious, though, you're going from a massive company, for-profit, huge access, all the things, to what feels like much more of a shoestring ministry vibe.
Oh, it's tiny. It's tiny.
So how was that transition? I mean, was it like you love what you're doing so much, you don't even, you just love, you know, living the dream? Or was it like, oh, wow, this is, I don't even have somebody to run these cables here. I mean, it's I'm
culture
like
shock
everything.
I really call it a culture shock, Brian, a little bit because, you know, I went from working with 3,000 people every day, or really even the team that we were on was about 15 or 20 of us every day, to a team at PAO, which in Sports Spectrum, that was 15 people total.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only one working on Sports Spectrum initially. I mean, I was doing the interviews, editing, producing, booking, social media posts, all of it, right? Getting the guests to join us. And then once it was done, you know, getting it out there, I was writing stories for the website, even did a couple stories for the magazine initially. I mean, I still contribute to the magazine, but writing actual stories, like I was trying to do it all. One-stop shop here, doing, you know, seven different jobs for Sports Spectrum. And, you know, it was a little overwhelming at first and probably wasn't my best work, because I'm kind of touching a bunch of different areas and I didn't have a chance to really kind of focus on one area. But as you do it, you know, you kind of, it's like a, you know, a muscle. The more you exercise it and the more you lift, the more that muscle becomes, you know, connected, I guess, to what you're doing. And it's not as difficult or as painful, I guess, on the back end. And that's kind of what it felt like for me.
Okay.
Eventually our team got a little bigger. It's still not that big. I think it's five of us now, but we have a few people that are contributing, and we have our managing editor, John, who does a great job with our magazine and website. We have a designer and we have a social media person. So we have a few people that are actually contributing. But at that first, man, that was a culture shock. And not only that, but working from home by myself. I did the working from home thing before it was cool, before COVID hit. And I had to figure that out. Like, what does that look like on a daily basis for me? I've been doing it now 7 years, and I really feel like I've got a much better rhythm now than I did then, because I like people. I'm naturally an extrovert by nature. I like to spend time with people and be in community and hang out and even going to work. I like to be around people, and I'm not around anybody now except virtually. And that took some getting used to. Praise God that I'm involved in my local church, because I think I still can find community there. And that's really where I seek community now. I don't have to seek it in my job or anything like that anymore. Although if God called me to work in an office again and be around people every day, I don't think I'd mind that either. But it was hard at first. It was really hard.
I'm curious if, and I mean, I know this is going to feel a little bit like you're bragging on yourself question. So sorry, you're just going to have to deal with it. But you come in, you're a driven person, and I love your book when you're talking about leadership lessons. You talk a little bit about your background and just having that kind of natural let's go in you, which I think is partially why you fit so great in kind of the sports world. Let's get after this.
Totally.
You've got this unique expertise. You've got a lot of drive. You come into Sports Spectrum. Tell me about what is different in the organization or the Ministry of Sports Spectrum since you came on board. What are some of those key things? You know, we used to have circulation of this and now it's here. Or you launched the podcast. So that's had a ton of, just tell me a few things, you know, that, I mean, we know God's using you. So let's celebrate that for a second. What's different?
Yeah, I think, I think I'll be honest with you, when I became the host of Sports Spectrum's podcast, you know, I hadn't hosted anything since college. So that was like, whoa, you want me to be the host? And initially they had put my face on the logo and it was Sports Spectrum podcast with Jason Romano. And like my name was on there and I'll never forget my boss kind of called me in about 6 months in and I'm talking to him and I think I was kind of getting a little full of myself because now I'm the guy, right? Yeah. With a microphone. And he didn't necessarily say it like that, but he said, you know, there might come a day when you're not the host of Sports Spectrum. And if that's the case, we can't just keep calling it Sports Spectrum with Jason Romano. It should just be Sports Spectrum. And I'm like, yes. And it wasn't just the fact that we changed the logo and took my face off it and really made it about the ministry, but it was a reminder of the life verse that our ministry stands on, which is John 3:30. John the Baptist talking about Jesus, he must increase, I must decrease. And so it's about living in the increase of Christ and the decrease of self. And so it's not putting yourself to the point where you don't care about yourself at all, but it's constantly increasing Jesus, right? And I think that was a big lesson early on, probably 6 months in or so, that I remember learning and thinking, okay, yeah, this is not about me. I'm glad I get to be a host and I'm glad I get to do these interviews, but this is not about me. In fact, many people don't know a lot about me when they listen to Sports Spectrum, and that's on purpose. I don't talk about my books. I don't talk about my history unless it comes up in a conversation that the guest might ask me about. I want it to be about the guest, but ultimately I want it to be about Jesus. And so I'm intentional about that. And I think that's the biggest lesson I learned. And sometimes that takes a little bit of a lot of humility and humbling yourself and reminding it's not about you, because it's very easy to think the world revolves around you when you have a microphone in front of you. I worked with people who thought that and it's not their fault. They weren't bad people.
Yeah.
It's just, that's kind of how it was.
Right.
And I think you remember like, hey, this isn't about me. You know, I'm here with this opportunity to point people to Christ in the world of sports. That's it. So let me do that. Let me focus on that. And that's a big lesson I learned. I mean, obviously.
I'm going to say, I want to make one observation and then circle back to questions. So, the observation is just from listening now to a bunch of your interviews, just want to so commend you on how winsomely you ask folks questions about their spiritual lives. And it's really cool. And sometimes if they don't kind of get what you're kind of going for, repositioning the question in a way that really lets their own journey come out in authentic ways, not just who Christ is to them, but then how they're growing today, which if we have enough time, we'll see. I was going to throw some of your own questions back at you just for just for fun. I was like, he asks this question a lot. I'm gonna give it to him. But anyway, back to that question of just straight up, like what's changed at Sports Spectrum. I mean, you said, hey, you went from one of you to five of you. Any other interesting sort of, I'm talking metric stuff. So it's funny, our staff, I'm a big believer. I don't want to worship numbers, but I think metrics are important to track what kind of impact we're making. So just tell me what's changed on the metric side of things since you've been on board.
Well, I mean, when I came on board, Sports Spectrum was, I don't want to call it a dying brand, but it was kind of there and they didn't really have anybody to care for it. Right. And I think that's why it ended up getting sold to Steve, my boss and PAO to find, you know, some way to kind of properly care for that. And so when I came on board, they just said in the first year, like, just do a bunch of stuff, like try some things, write some stories, start the podcast. You know, maybe you don't know how to promote it yet, but just do it, right? Like scale this thing and get some things going. Since then though, I think we've learned, you know, just good rhythms, what works, what doesn't, you know, for us, a proper way to have, you know, advertisers or partnerships or sponsors on the show. Like, what does that look like? And how can you do that in a way that's not threatening or sounds too commercially? You know, our podcast, I think, is somewhere in the range of like 5.5 million downloads.
Wow.
That's over 7 years. I mean, it's a healthy number, but I try not to get caught up in that. I mean, there was a moment last January or February this past year at the Super Bowl where I got an opportunity to interview Brock Purdy for 90 seconds at the Super Bowl, at Super Bowl availability. And I'd talked to Brock previously and got to know him a little bit, but I went up to him. He's the 49ers quarterback, for those listening who don't know who Brock Purdy is, but he, you know, had his team in the Super Bowl to take on the Chiefs. And I went up to him and I asked him two questions about his faith, what he learned this year from the Lord, and, you know, Bible scripture that he was reading, and then prayer and the importance of prayer. We ran that 90-second clip on Instagram, and I don't know why, the favor of God, I guess, or whatever, 6.5 million views of that video. It went like super viral, and I couldn't figure out why. I mean, I understand God can do whatever he wants, but like this is, and maybe the why is because people didn't realize there's conversations like this happening, and it was only 90 seconds, but to me, this is the stuff I've been doing for 7 years. And here's what I would say. I'll sum it up this way, Brian, and forgive me for going so long-winded, but I really believe it's just being faithful. Just staying faithful. For 7.5 years, I've tried to stay faithful with this ministry and not sugarcoat it, not, you know, make it cookie cutter, and certainly not compromise or water down the gospel ever. You know, we stand firm in that we are, you know, we are a Christian company who want to point people to Jesus Christ. That's it. And I think we just try to stay faithful. And then when the Lord wants to move, like he did in February with Brock Purdy, he can move. Yeah. And we're just trying to stay faithful and carrying our loaves and fish, like so many talk about, and especially Jesus talks about in the Word. And we just try to do that as best as possible.
Yeah, that's such a great word for anybody listening, no matter what their sphere of influence. There is something that just comes with that, as one author put it, a long obedience in the same direction. Just keep it on, keep it on. And somehow God just honors that steady faithfulness. I'm curious, after all of these different interviews you've had with coaches and athletes and all kinds of different influencers within the sports arena, you're a lot of times inviting them to share, not just about their sport, their profession, but also their spiritual lives. Would you say that those conversations have made any particular impact on you as the question asker?
Very much so.
How so?
Very much so. Well, I think because I'm encouraged. I remember talking to he was a high school basketball coach. And he was battling cancer. He since passed away. He's in Indiana, in Fort Wayne, Indiana. This is maybe three or four years ago.
My hometown, Jason. You're speaking my love language here.
You probably know who I'm talking about. I don't know. I can't think of his name, but it was the Christian high school in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Yeah.
And he got cancer, but he was winning state championships. Like, he was doing it all. So he was the legit guy. And I remember having him on. I wanted to talk to him about battling cancer, right? Like, how are you trusting God in the midst of this cancer battle that you're in the middle of? And like I said, he ended up going to be with the Lord a couple years later. But the man was quoting scripture. In every answer every question I asked, he was just quoting scripture. And I was so encouraged and kind of like intimidated a little bit. Like, I don't know scripture. Like, this dude knows it. Mm-hmm. And he's not a pastor. He's not a Bible scholar. He's not an author. He was a high school basketball coach.
Wow.
And this man knew scripture. I mean, it's on there. People can go find that podcast. I wish I had the name of the coach, but I'm sure if you looked up Fort Wayne and Christian and Sports Spectrum, you could find it. Mm-hmm. He talked from such a posture of understanding and knowing Jesus, and really, really, really a guy who you could tell was in scripture every day and walking the walk in a way that was so powerful. So that's how I think I'm encouraged by so many people when I talk to them about their journeys, not just because they're, you know, cool athletes who scored lots of touchdowns. Like, that's fun. But when you get a guy or a gal who just loves Jesus and loves on people and wants to share that, but truly walks the walk, like talks about discipleship, talks about, you know, goes below the surface, we'll just say, with their faith. Man, I'm all in on that. And that's what encourages me.
Yeah.
And it's a reminder too, Brian, that yes, I work in ministry. I'll even challenge back to you a little bit. Like, it's probably real easy for us as people who work in ministry to let that ministry substitute as our relationship with Jesus sometimes. And I have to be reminded sometimes in these interviews that it's my relationship with Jesus that has to come first.
That's right. Yeah.
So my work in Sports Spectrum might be great and focus on Christ, but it's not my relationship with Christ. I have to remember that I, every single day, got to wake up and have that relationship with Christ in my own personal one-on-one way and not let work that I do kind of substitute for that. And that's been a nice, not a nice reminder sometimes. Sometimes it's really hard, but that's a reminder that I get quite often from the interviews I do.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's such a, what a gift to be able to have conversations that are challenging to you personally like that, even as you're doing what you do just professionally. And that's why I love listening to Sports Spectrum. It's funny, I had an overlap with Sports Spectrum way back in the day. Yeah. I think it was when I was at Indiana University and I was part of FCA. And I think somehow I heard, and then decades passed, and you know, and all of a sudden, I don't even know how it surfaced on my radar, honestly, to this moment. But now I'm just listening, and I'll get on the treadmill, and I'll you know bust through, and I just feel like I am so challenged and encouraged, which is a great thing. Now I want to be mindful of your time, and I know we're getting really close.
Yes.
So we are going to indeed we're going to land with the question that I've heard you one of probably your top three questions. What is God teaching you lately? How are you growing? What's your growth edge right now?
That's really good. I like that you turn that back to me. I think the thing I've been really paying attention to is prayer and intentional prayer. I've struggled with that. I could if you asked me to close this conversation in prayer, I could do that. But I want to be mindful of the prayers that I'm praying to God every day and make sure that that's consistent. My time in prayer has not been consistent for many years. It's maybe before dinner. You know, I might say a prayer before the meal, or if we're at church, obviously you pray. But I want to make sure on my own time I'm doing that. And so what I've been doing the last, I don't know, 6 months is I usually get up early in the morning anyways. And I tried the whole come into my room, shut the door, get on my knees and just pray for, you know, as long as I can.
Yeah.
And I end up, it's hard. I'm not saying I fall asleep every time, but it's really hard for me to focus. So what I do is I go down to my basement and I start pacing, but in the pacing, I'm praying.
Mm.
And so I'll put on some like kind of instrumental worship music on the TV, on YouTube, and I'll just pray. And I learned this acronym for prayer. It's the word ACTS, nothing to do with the book of Acts.
Yeah.
But it's ACTS, and A is this admiration for God. C is this confession of my sins. T is thanksgiving, gratitude. And S is supplication, or what I'm asking him to, you know, provide that day or to heal or to help with that day. And it's just been a really good rhythm for me in my prayer time with God. And he's teaching me to keep pressing in on that. Like, keep talking to me, bring your requests to me, make your request known, you know, I try to follow it's really following the principle of how Jesus taught us to pray with the Lord's Prayer. And it's been helpful to me a lot. I still struggle, you know, and that's kind of what makes prayer so helpful is when I struggle or have something that I fall back in, or I look at something inappropriate or something comes up, you know, there's that beautiful word called grace. And I can come to the throne of grace every morning in that confession part of the acronym I just told you about, and just receive that from God. And I don't know, man, that prayer has helped me so much in the morning. And I get to get a few steps in too. So it's keeping me active and not just, you know, I believe in the idea of falling to your knees and praying. But for me, I just need to be walking around pacing, which helps me kind of focus a little bit.
I'll tell you what, I've had the same, I mean, sometimes I'm sitting when I'm praying, but I'll tell you what, sometimes I'll be walking around. Sometimes I'll just stand up and I'll have like my iPad on the top of my dresser. And that way I can, if I'm reading or doing some journaling or whatever, I'm standing up. And then another thing that's been super helpful for me that I can't always do, because part of what I want to do is pray and do my time with God in a way that my kids can see. And so I've kind of, and so this next part doesn't work when I'm like in the middle of the living room and they're getting ready for school, but I'll periodically just pray out, go up to my room and just pray out loud. And between walking and praying out loud, there is something that's been really transformative for me about that versus just kind of the, you know, silent prayer. And,
that's what I do. I'm outwardly praying. I go to the basement because I don't want to wake up my wife.
Right.
I don't want to wake up my daughter when she's here in the summertime. And so I go down to the basement. So, you know, we're upstairs and then there's the middle floor and then there's the basement. I go down to the basement and just, they can't hear me. And I just openly, out loudly pray.
There it is.
And it's been phenomenal. It really has. And I think God wants us to do that. Like, he wants us to bring our request. There's no request that we can't bring to him, or no concern or no thought that he doesn't already know about. But I think when we speak it out loud, I think it does us some good too, to be able to say it, as opposed to just having it be a silent prayer, which, hey, silent prayers are prayers as well. But for me to be able to kind of outwardly say it, and like you said, be moving, be active in doing that, it's really, really been helpful to me.
Yeah, there's something about our, you know, sometimes there's a dichotomy people think of their spirit versus their body, and somehow interacting with all of those at once, I feel like, is really a great thing. It's been so good having you on today, Jason, and I have a feeling someday in the future we'll have to do a part two, because there are some really important aspects of your story, some of which you've written about, particularly with your relationship with your father and a journey of forgiveness that I think would be super powerful to explore sometimes. So we're going to have to someday, and we've got some other collab things we're talking about that we're not going to mention right now that we're, I can tell you at least one of us is really looking forward to, and that would be me. So I've already been telling our staff about those coming, but I'm going to wait, keep those in my back pocket to share it another time. But hey, I just want to encourage you, your leadership and your ministry has meant a lot to me. And I know it has meant a lot to many, many thousands of folks who listen. And of course, you've got one of those ministries that you know a very, very, very little bit about the impact you're making. And I think it's probably, sometimes I think that for myself too, it's probably a good thing because, you know, you just like, hey, I'm going to be faithful and know the Lord's using it. But keep up the great work. And can't wait for our next conversation. I'll be praying for your time as a few months down the road when you get to go to the Super Bowl again and have some opportunities there. But thanks for being on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Brian, for having me. And part two can definitely happen. Let's just figure out a time and record it for sure. I appreciate you having me, though. Anytime you want me back, here I am, bro.
Great. Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation today with Jason. I sure did. And I really appreciated his example of stepping out in faith. Now, I realized Jason's story was like a huge faith step when he left ESPN to start at Sports Spectrum. But can I just tell you, there are opportunities every single day to step out in faith. Sometimes that's just sharing an encouraging word with somebody. Sometimes it's sharing your faith with somebody. Sometimes it's being financially generous. There are all kinds of different ways. Sometimes it is taking a risk professionally, even keeping the same job, just trying a new thing. So I want to encourage you today. What you are going to discover as you step out in faith and as you trust Jesus is he will be there, and he'll start opening things up that you didn't even know were possible because you stepped out in faith. And Jason's story and life is a great example of that. If you were encouraged by today's conversations, please do rate and review Made to Advance. It really helps us get the word out about the podcast. This has been a production of Engedi Church. We have more incredible conversations on the way. And so until next time, just know you were made to advance.